pull up a stool and join us. 585-866-4FAN. 866-4326. The Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia on the Sports Leader. 95.7 FM and AM 950. The Fan, Rochester.
Was that wrong?
Yeah, it hurt. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, it hurt because we put them in field position. We gave up 3 points without their defense, I mean, offense getting on the field, you know, and that was on us, but everybody believed in the call.
It was an accident, but it was really,
an accident fits, though.
Yeah, like, it kind of works. That's Tyler Boyd, Titans wide receiver on the turnover on downs that seemed to shift the game as we welcome in Nate Geary, Buffalo Bills Radio Network, WGR, Odyssey Sports sister station. Nate, I want to say that the slow starts by the Buffalo Bills this season isn't a nothing, but we're talking about it on a day after the Bills beat their opponent by 24 points. What's your take on the slow starts that we've seen in a handful of games this season?
It's like one of those things maybe you throw in the back pocket to monitor. You know, is it something that we should, you know, really harp on from this game? Maybe not, but I think in large, you know, the Bills played a really strong game, especially in the second half. But I mentioned this in my post game. It felt like today we got the full Bills experience. We got to see the floor, which was both offensively and defensively, by the way. We got to see the floor, right? We got to see them not really be able to get off the field on third down, which is an issue for this defense, you know, not just against, you know, the best quarterbacks and the best offenses, but they struggled to get off the field on third down. And you know, part of that is on first and second down, they were not nearly productive enough. And they were in the Titans in the first half, especially over the first three series or so, just found themselves in a lot of third and manageable situations. And you know, once they sort of got the run game under control, it really made Tennessee much easier to defend. And then, you know, on the other side on offense, right, going three and out on their first three drives, four of their first five drives. Yeah, that's a concern to me because against a very good team, against a team like the Ravens, for instance, which we saw, right, the Bills decided to receive the kick. They go three and out. And on the first play, the Ravens basically, you know, obviously everyone remembers that 85-yard touchdown, whatever it was. Like, you can't do that against good teams. So I think what it showed me is that this is a team that's capable in any game looking like the team they did in the second half. But they also could look like the team that we saw in the first half. And I think we've seen that over the course of full games this year. And in order for them in January to not, you know, I feel like a lot in January, the Bills, this is not new, I guess, which is why there's, I think, a little bit more concern or a cause for concern for me, because this is what happens in January. You know, we'll see them play a game like the New England Patriots, perfect game, right? We'll see them play, 59 and 47 seconds of elite level football. And in 13 seconds, you know, so it just to me is how can you have the self-awareness that at any moment you could play like that floor? And what can you do to raise that floor week in and week out? And I think the move for Amari Cooper raised the floor for this Bills offense when he's fully integrated. But as a team, how do you avoid what we saw in the first half? I would say probably the first 25 minutes of the game yesterday. And then how do you avoid what we saw, I don't know, for a large part, maybe 45 minutes of the game in Baltimore and another 40 minutes in Houston, right? I mean, those are good teams that the Bills played poorly. And you're not going to win games like you did yesterday. If we got to play the Tennessee Titans every week, maybe it'd be a different story, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of the baseline here, is that we all can kind of recognize Tennessee wasn't a good team, and if you play a better team, maybe the game would have gone differently. But, Nate, I want to look at the positive. You brought up Cooper, and Cooper coming in, making an impact right away. And just to kind of give everybody your resume, you played quarterback at the D3 level, so you know what you're talking about here. Cooper going in, what does that do for the other receivers, the rest of this offense? Could we see the Bills really just kind of making the 11 personnel here, just the one tight end, one running back, three receivers, really more of their base offense, would you say?
Well, what I would tell you is it now gives them the flexibility to change based on the team they're playing that week. I think it makes them harder to defend from – hey, like, we're going to play the Ravens, right? Well, you might now want to see more 12 personnel, or I'm sorry, 11 personnel, because now you think you have one guy that can beat man coverage, and maybe that forces the Ravens out of man coverage. What it also does is, in that game against the Ravens, right, what do? They just basically said, we're not going to give you the middle of the field, beat us to the perimeter. The Bills didn't have an answer for that. So if they can now beat the Ravens on the perimeter, it now opens up the run game in the middle of the field. It now opens up, you know, maybe more of an effective game plan to get Khalil Shakir in the middle of the fielding and create mismatches now with Khalil Shakir, who was probably drawing, you know, everyone's number one corner going into this week. And now every week that the Bills walk into a matchup, the number one corner is going to be matchup on Amari Cooper. What does that do now for Khalil Shakir? Well, we saw what it did in the second half. Especially on that scoring drive, he gets like what, four catches, two straight little screen passes that he was able to get off. Well, what does it do for, you know? And I know I had a couple people that were like, well, Nate, you know, Amari Cooper wasn't on the field for any of those plays that Keon Coleman. I said, but that's not the point of how that opens up other people. What it does is it starts to force defenses to have to defend horizontally and vertically, right? And now it opens up things for everybody else. Dalton Kincaid, I don't think it's a surprise. He had his best game as well, too, because the middle of the field is open more. Early in that game, you could tell the Titans were defending the middle of the field. They were saying, we don't think you guys can beat us man-to-man. We don't think you can beat us with your wide receivers. So we're going to take away Dalton Kincaid. We're going to take away the shotgun pin and pull game. And the Bills were lost for three drives. And then they figured it out, right? So I think for me, it just opens up a lot of diversity in their offense from a week-to-week perspective. And they can sort of mold their game plan and personnel groupings based on the teams they're playing each week. And I think it'll allow them to dictate terms a little bit better.
I think we're pretty much locked in on Josh Allen in the statistic that he hasn't thrown an interception yet this year. And that opens up the conversation of, well, is Josh Allen in the MVP conversation? And through 3 weeks this season, and I'm like, yeah, absolutely. He's playing at that level. We've seen, you know, some less than ideal games. The Houston game comes to mind as a game where, like, that wasn't a good Josh Allen game. Statistically, and of course, they didn't get the outcome. Where are you at with that argument that Josh Allen should be in the MVP conversation?
I think he's leading it. I think this with Josh, I think one of the most frustrating parts about the conversation around Josh, not just from the media, but from other fan bases, is the constant moving of the goalposts. Well, for the last three seasons, what's held him back from being an MVP is that he's turning the ball over. Okay, well, he is now the first quarterback in NFL history to throw 12 touchdown passes without an interception. He's the third quarterback in NFL history to, in his team's first seven games, have at least 10 touchdowns with no interceptions. Okay, well, now he's doing something which is dramatically shifted from what he had previously done, just like the conversation around accuracy, just like the conversation around being too reliant on running the football. It's all of these narratives, and you'll just find a way to move the goalposts now. It's, well, Josh couldn't do it alone. They proved that. So that's why they had to go get Amari Cooper, as if wanting to not expect your quarterback to do everything each and every week is some sort of knock against him. When, you know, Patrick Mahomes has had a Hall of Fame tight, maybe the best tight end of all time on his roster since the day he walked into the league. Lamar Jackson has probably one of the easiest situations for any quarterback in the NFL right now, with a running game that complements what they want to do so well. And yet it's, you know, Lamar is more deserving, or somehow, I don't even know how Patrick Mahomes is even in this conversation, but he's there, right? So I think the sooner, as a fan, as a commentator, as a local media person that covers his team, you just pull yourself away from what the MVP is. Not the end all be all for Josh Allen. And if Josh Allen never wins an MVP, he'll still be a Hall of Fame quarterback. If Josh Allen never wins a Super Bowl, he'll probably be a Hall of Fame quarterback. To me, it's far more about, can Josh fix the things that he needs to fix? He does every single year. He adds a new layer, a new dimension to his game every year. This year, it's protecting the football, not making the big mistake. And frankly, guys, he's doing it without running the football, which was another huge knock on Josh Allen. Well, you know, if you take out the running stats, well, okay, we'll take them out now because they have not really made that level. He should have had three passing touchdowns this week. and 300 yards, which would have tied him for the most touchdowns in NFL history with Patrick Mahomes through a player's first 100 starts. At this point, he falls one shy. I don't know that that's going to be a knock against him, but I'm sure people will find a way. So, you know, I think for me, I've sort of removed my general care for whether or not Josh Allen's going to win an MVP because, you know, Lamar Jackson's got two, and he's got just as many Super Bowl titles as Josh Allen. And, you know, several fewer wins in the playoffs when it matters the most. So, you know, the conversations are frustrating. So if you pull yourself out of it, you'll probably be more mentally healthy for it.
Wow. Just laying it out. Danger. No reaction to that?
No, that's why I asked the question, because I knew Nate was going to have that answer.
Outstanding. I love that. Nate Geary, Buffalo Bills Radio Network, our guest here. Nate, on the Bills running game, so James Cook was back. Do you think that toe is going to be something? I mean, it was okay, Dave. He found the end zone. Or does it even not matter that much that the Bills running attack really is a little more plug and play, if you will, with Ray Davis certainly looking good in the second half. You got Ty Johnson contributing. Your thoughts on Cook and the Bills running attack, where it's at right now entering week eight?
Well, when the offensive line plays like it did in the second half, you could put me back there and there's a good chance that I'd average 3 or 4 yards a carry. So I maybe don't want to overreact too much to the success that we've seen Ray Davis had versus James Cook over the last couple of weeks, obviously injury last week. But I think for me, the thing that was probably one of the more if not most frustrating part about the game plan and early in that game last week, or yesterday, I should say, is they sort of ran the same play over and over again. It was that little pin and pull out of shotgun with James Cook. And Cook was basically getting contact at or behind the line of scrimmage on every single one of those runs. And it was a lot on first down. There wasn't a lot of variety to it. And I kept saying to myself, I'm like, where's the outside zone? Where's the cutback? Where's anything else? Because they came into this game with a game plan of here's how we want to beat this Titans defense. The Titans stopped it, and it took the Bills a half to change. And then we finally saw them get under center in the second half, and they had way more success running the football. They're creating a little bit more downhill momentum in the run game, which has been something over the last couple of years. This was a Ken Dorsey issue, is the play action's more effective from under center because the quarterback has to turn his back and show the ball, and it really exaggerates that first read for linebackers. It forces them at times to take that step up before they bail out into coverage. And if you're doing it on a shotgun, you're giving the defense that extra half second to read and react and get themselves back in a position. So if you could pull a linebacker an extra yard by being under center, if you can create a little bit more momentum moving forward from running the ball under center, which we've seen, then the Bills need to go to it, and they need to go to it sooner. So that was my only complaint, is they just kept running the same running play over and over again. And sometimes that works, but if it doesn't work, you can't sort of keep hitting your head against the wall. And listen, I think what yesterday proved to me is this is still a passing football team. You can tell me all you want how you want to run the football. Running the football has value. And even running the football when it's not effective still has value. But this is not a team that should be anywhere close to 50-50 run pass. And maybe all of that will work its way out by the year's end. And maybe there's always going to be one or two games a year where you have the Cowboys game, right, where you're going to throw it 10 times because you're just having that much success on the ground. That is an exception, though. That is not the rule. The rule is when you have a quarterback at the level that Josh Allen is, and now I think a really strong complementary group of weapons, this should be a pass-first team. And if the second half didn't prove that, I don't know what will.
Nate, I've been so impressed by the play of rookie Dwayne Carter on the defensive line.
No kidding.
I'm not saying this or bringing this up to you know, put down Ed Oliver, but I mean, what I've seen out of Carter this year feels like more than I saw out of Ed Oliver in his rookie year. And you invested a third in this player instead of the first in the contract that you've invested in Oliver. And I think we've seen Oliver at times kind of, I don't want to say inconsistent, but it feels like he disappears at times. There are games where you want more out of your defensive lineman and you just don't get it. Tell me a little bit about what you're seeing and compare the two here, because it feels like that 1-2 punch of Carter and Ed Oliver, and Carter specifically yesterday with that play, breaking up that 4th and 2 and turning the game on that 4th down, that turnover on downs. Man, it feels like they found somebody special here with Carter.
Well, I think I said this during pregame yesterday, and I think it's probably the best way I've been able to describe this. I think Dwayne plays such a complimentary game to Ed Oliver, a very different game than Ed Oliver. And you'll see this from time to time, and especially in the screen game, right? Especially in the counter, and especially in the trap game, is teams will try to trap Ed Oliver because they know how quickly he gets off the ball. It's a huge advantage for him. He's a penetrating three technique. He can get upfield in a hurry, but that can also be used against him. And it's often used against him in the screen game, again, in the counters and some of those trap plays. That is not Dwayne Carter's game. Dwayne Carter is more deliberate. He's more physical. He's more bull rush. He's more of a two-gap player, where I think Ed Oliver's more of a one-gap player. Again, that penetrating style, rather than I'm going to force you to at least have your center. He's got to contact me before he gets to the next level. He's got to put hands on me. Otherwise, I'm going to eat up two gaps here. And I think that's really the biggest difference. And I think complementary-wise, you might start to see more Dwayne Carter on the early downs in those obvious running situations where you want that two-gap defender and a three-gap or and the three-technique position, and not a guy that teams can sort of pick on and use the strength of Ed Oliver against him, whereas you can keep him. And let's be honest, too, guys, those running plays, they take a little bit more of a physical toll on a player. So if you have a bigger body, a guy that is a little bit more effort-based, a little bit more physicality-based in Dwayne Carter, you have him out there on first or second down, or maybe first and then out there on second and third down, I think it puts Ed Oliver into situational football that is more fitting to his skill set, rather than him being the guy that plays more than any defensive lineman, which has basically been the case the last 2 years. Then you don't necessarily have offenses game planning around the strength of one of your best players. Instead, you have to work around the fact that Dwayne Carter has an opposite skill set and can fill the void of some of the weaknesses in Ed Oliver's game. So I think it's gone incredibly well. He's also popped to me, guys. He's been, if not the most impressive rookie, right up there. And you know, obviously Ray Davis has played well. They are getting a ton of contributions from their rookie class. And this is how they will maintain this level of play during Josh Allen's career. When you're paying a quarterback $60 million, by the way, Josh is probably going to get extended this offseason, right? Yeah. So part of that will be to create more cap flexibility, but also he's going to get a pay raise, and he's going to be deserving of that pay raise. And when you have a quarterback making 60, 70, 80, whatever that number ends up being, right? you need to find ways to fill the back end of your roster and the depth players in the roster with really good drafting. And this has been a very strong draft class. And we obviously haven't really seen Cole Bishop to this point yet. So this has been a really strong draft class. And to me, it probably will get stronger.
Nate, last one from me. And we're all going to kind of learn together. I'm having trouble figuring out what Seattle is all about. I mean, a team that had a three-game losing streak, a terrible loss to the Giants at home nonetheless, but then they thump Atlanta, and they have a bunch of names that we know on offense. One of them, we're going to find out about the status of DK Metcalf, but what's your initial thought here about the Bills going cross-country to face a team that they don't see very often?
Yeah, and it looks like we just got an update on that too. A LCL or MCL sprain. It looks like a grade one MCL sprain, which is going to be a week-to-week injury for DK Metcalf. It's very possible. I saw something that if that was the case, he could try to push through it and play as early as this week, but probably an injury that they probably want to sit him down for a little while. Listen, Seattle is an interesting team. I think that under Mike McDonald, they will continue getting better defensively. But right now, there's areas you can expose this defense. I really like Witherspoon. I think he is right up there with one of the most physical, athletic corners in the league, defensive backs. I think he pretty much play every position in that defense. They've got Leonard Williams. They've got some nice pieces on that defensive line, but they're young, they're inexperienced, and they're learning a very complex defensive system that I think they'll keep getting better as the year goes on. But I think they're catching him at the right time, because I don't still think that defense is as good as it's going to be by the end of the year, next year, because Mike McDonald's system is a bit complex, and I think it's a little dumbed down right now, and I think there's an opportunity there for this Bills offense to get after a little bit. But man, I'm going to tell you, this probably is going to be the second best rushing offense they're going to play all season. Kenneth Walker is, I mean, is there a running back playing better than him in the NFL right now? I'm not sure. I mean, he's got the same sort of level of physicality as a Derrick Henry, but he's quicker. He's more athletic, can kind of help you in the pass game. And then Zach Charbonnet comes in. He's also physical and is a great pass catcher. And, you know, they're going to throw the football a bunch. And the Bills are equipped better than just about anybody in the NFL to defend the pass, and especially the explosive pass game, which they really rely heavily on, especially if DK Metcalf's in the lineup. But all in all, I mean, even if DK's out, you still got Tyler Lockett, you still got Jackson Smith and Jigba. You know, it's a potent offense that's got weapons all over the place, and a quarterback in Geno Smith, who is sort of going back to the player we saw 2 years ago. He's averaging almost 300 yards a game. He's accurate, and yeah, I mean, they've lost to the Giants, but they've also had some impressive wins as well. So it's going to be a tough matchup. There's no doubt about it, and especially on the road in one of the toughest places in the NFL to play. It'll be a great matchup for this Bills team, and hope they come on the other side.
Nate, quickly, just because you brought it up, I am concerned about the run defense of the Buffalo Bills. We saw him get gashed in the first half with Pollard. We saw what Derrick Henry did, and we saw the first half against Arizona as well, and the points you bring up on Walker and on Charbonnet are valid, and it makes me nervous about the game on Sunday. What's the root cause of their inability to stop the physical run game of some of these teams?
Probably the same issue that it's been, is that they sometimes lack that gap integrity and getting downhill, and sometimes their defensive backs get caught up when they're trying to sort of clean things up. But it starts at the defensive line level. If they can stop the offensive linemen to getting free releases to the linebacker level, they're going to be in a better shape. But listen, the power run game, this is a defense that invites you to run the football. So they are, I don't want to say they're bad at defending the run on purpose, but they would rather you run the football than beat them deep over the top. And I think that's a philosophy that has gotten Sean McDermott the notoriety of being one of the league's best defensive coaches. And they're going to invite Seattle to run the football, and they've got to do a good job of keeping them in third and long situations so they can get off the field on third down.
Nate Geary, who after the Bills and Seahawks, if you want to hear people call up and perhaps call him a cynic, you can do that in the Buffalo Bills radio network, Nate. I don't know if you're just being honest. Does that
That's
make
why
yourself?
We all hang out yeah. together is because we're all cynical about this team.
We're all just I like to remind people I'm miserable all the time. So just leave me alone.
Appreciate the time, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
Of course, guys. Talk to you.
There's Nate Geary. WGR, the Buffalo Bills radio net. Noted cynic, Nate Geary.
What are we, just the old men up in the Muppets? And up yeah. in the balcony there?
Yes. What, Stadler and Waldorf?
Whoa, good pull.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I'm 12. I mean, I should know the Muppets. Appreciate Nate stopping by and sharing some of his thoughts here as we get ready for Seattle on Sunday. We should also mention tomorrow, as is per usual on a Tuesday afternoon, we'll be checking in with Matt Perino of Syracuse.com. The Syracuse Post-Standard will be getting his thoughts on yesterday's win.
Yeah, saw Matt out there yesterday. Amherst head coach Mike Leone will be stopping by. Michael F. Florio as well. We'll get his thoughts because he's a Bills fan and a Met fan. Look, I'm going to get more sleep now. Yeah, you know, I'm like, okay. I guess
no
that's
more
it.
Barf, cry, and die. It's over.
It's over.
We'll get to a happy hour next. More on yesterday's win in Orchard Park, and we'll give Gene a few minutes to put a moratorium on the Met season as well. A final word on the Mets season. That's all coming up here on The Fan.
You're listening to The Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia. 95.7 FM and AM 950. The Fan, Rochester.